We are brought to you in part by the Union Street in Berwick, Nova Scotia. Recorded live here in the Annapolis Valley, this podcast is lucky enough to be on the stage of one of the country's best venues and restaurants. It has a long, lovely history of being family-owned, even has its own best-selling cookbook. Holy frig, that's unique. And did I mention it's an incredible venue? Like the best sound for your money anywhere. Suck it, Massey Hall. I said it, but that's me. Not Union Street saying that. Back to them. They're incredible. Come there sometime. Come down sometime. I'll probably be there at the end of the bar talking about Massey Hall. Let's chat. Okay, successful sponsor ad, right? Welcome, welcome, one and all, to another episode of the world's greatest live-recorded music artist and performer-focused interview podcast out there today, The Friendly Heckler. I'm Zachary Miller. I've been known to yodel a tune or two and shimmy on stage myself, but this is where I just get to be silly, sitting down with all the living artists I love. So thanks for listening. Thanks for checking this crazy thing out. Thanks for subscribing, sharing, and following it, being part of all these live shows, which I should mention. Let's talk about live dates. December 7th, that's 7 days after this comes out. Join me at the Ardoys Hall because Gina Burgess is my guest, and it's a nice big hall, so there's still tickets, I'm sure, but email me at thefriendlyheckler@gmail.com and reserve your tickets. And then February 21st, Caleb Miles and I are going to record an episode in Wolfville at the Saltbox Brewing Tap Room there. So get your tickets. Email me at thefriendlyheckler@gmail.com. You can even just heckle me at thefriendlyheckler@gmail.com if you want. Or heckle me over on Instagram at friendlyhecklerpodcast. Or on the Facebook thing at thefriendlyheckler. You can heckle me anywhere, just on the street. I don't care. On this episode, we get to hear from Rebecca Fairless, who I met in the Annapolis Valley's insane music community not long after moving here. And I'm so glad we finally get to dig into her dynamic musical background. It's all over the place. Rebecca is a trained music therapist and songwriter who just released an album of her songs with her duo project, The Dusty Halos. Great name. Rebecca joined me at the Union Street in Berwick, Nova Scotia, and we jumped into all of the music from all around here, even a bit about New Brunswick, music therapy, and Rebecca just plays these unbelievable songs that they have such an old-time quality to me. There's something Tin Pan Alley, maybe theatrical about them, but it's all wrapped up with the feelings and vibe of the 60s and 70s. You just got to hear these tunes. Rebecca delves into where those tunes come from. She takes me to church, or schools me on church, actually. We talk radical nuns, even, and even about our favorite strange movie soundtracks. We get weird, and it gets good. You can find Rebecca's music and upcoming shows on her website, RebeccaFairless.com. RebeccaFairless.com. But I will still mention off the top the Dusty Halos album release December 9th, that's 9 days after this comes out, at the Mousetrap above Good Robot Brewing in Halifax. Then Rebecca's hitting the road. January 3rd, the Transat Club in Tirana, and January 10th, Bar de Courcelles in Montreal, with more dates to be announced. You gotta catch Rebecca live and hear more of her songs. But for now, here's what we got up to.
Rebecca Fairless!
You could jump right into one if you want.
Sure. This is a song I wrote this summer. It's called Miramichi. Someday I'll walk across the bridge that spans the way across the water, high above the banks of the Miramichi. Gonna cast my troubles out into the middle of the water, Let that great wide river carry them out to sea. Oh, the cuckoo, she's a pretty bird. She sings along the shore. I wish she wouldn't build her nest up in my tree. Anyway, the water's flowing. That's the way that I'll be going. The undercurrent's got a hold of me.
Starting with a song about Miramichi.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a good word to sing. It's a poetic word.
Miramichi.
In and of itself, yeah.
How did you read it when you first moved to the province? Did you see it?
Well, you know what? Years ago, I read the novels of David Adams Richards, who writes, he's from Miramichi, and he writes a lot of books set there. So the word existed in my head for a long time, and it was vaguely connected to Eastern Canada.
Okay.
Which was very romanticized in my mind because I'm from Alberta.
Oh, okay.
So when I got here, I thought, ooh, the land of Miramichi. And
you knew how to say it already?
Somehow, yeah. I must have heard it on CBC or something.
Nice. Because I think I read it, and I think I read it in Japanese, and I said Miramichi. That's why, for sure. When I first moved here, I read everything wrong. Miramichi,
yeah,
Muscat de Bois. So you're from Alberta.
I grew up in Calgary.
In Calgary? You're
in
a city?
Calgary.
City kid, too?
Yeah.
Whoa, what part of Calgary?
Northwest.
Whoa, okay, because my grandmother's from Nose Hill.
No way.
Yeah, I grew up going to Nose Hill pretty often.
I know that hill.
You know the Nose Hill Library?
Yes, I do. That was one of my favorite libraries.
Whoa, okay, this is weird.
It's a good library.
Ah, beautiful. See, okay, I'm starting to feel like a freak. Like, I would say Nose Hill, and people are like, that's not a place.
Oh, it's a very large place.
Okay, all right,
big old hill, yeah.
Western Calgary.
Yeah.
And you became obsessed with Eastern culture?
It was just romanticized because, shows like 22 Minutes and stuff.
Yes.
Just people kind of, like, exaggerating the accent and, like, the fiddles and the raincoats and all those things. It was very exotic to me.
Had you ever
the
visited
ocean
before
was
you moved out here?
No, I never did. I moved out here blind. For school. And it was the right decision.
Wow.
I'm still here.
Did you get to Halifax and were you picturing St. John's, Newfoundland the whole time? And then you got to Halifax and you're like, oh, this is just another city.
No, I liked Halifax when I first got here.
Okay.
Yeah.
My wife was so disappointed. She was expecting all the tiny colored houses. And
I mean, there are colored houses in North End Halifax.
Yeah, Agricola's got four.
It has a lot, but they've really been working on reducing the number of them and replacing them with god awful condos. But there's still some nice
cities. Nice will be cities, yeah. I guess. Yeah. So you moved to Nova Scotia, and you ended up in the Annapolis Valley, which is where we currently are.
Yeah.
For all you podcast listeners, I have to talk to everybody in the world at the same time as you. It's a burden that is only for me to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you do as a songwriter, though. Like, your
nice
song. The best songs feel personal, but they're somehow universal.
Do you feel like Miramichi is universal?
I mean, I don't know if the songwriter can say. I guess it's up to the listeners, but...
there's even biblical references in there, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there is a church of St. Michael the Archangel in Miramichi, so...
Ah, so that's a really local reference you just made,
yeah,
then, too.
Yeah, it's only locals know.
Only the Miramichi locals. Mike Kerr once told me that everyone in Miramichi looks like him.
Oh, I've seen Mike Kerr.
Would you say that's true, then?
I'd have to go back.
Don't worry. This is too
check.
Early in the podcast for me to be getting you to
is
make
he
giant
from,
statements
is he from,
like that.
From Northern New Brunswick? Or?
I think so, yeah.
Oh,
I think
okay.
Mike is born up and around there, or at least his family is. But
it's such a beautiful place. I took the train up there because I love riding trains. And it's a beautiful journey. And the river... Have you been to Miramichi?
No.
It's a beautiful river. It's a very large river.
Okay.
It's very wide. And it's
Yukon River style? Is it as big as the Yukon?
You know, I've seen the Yukon River. I think it's as big. What do you think, Calvin?
Rebecca's asking the audience
yeah.
if there's...
It's full of salmon.
The Miramichi River's full of salmon.
I can't confirm that myself, but it's a big old river.
That's a
it's
whole
inspiring.
Other song,
yeah.
I guess. It's.
I know. I'll have to go back, go fishing, write the song.
Yeah, you need more fishing songs. I'm just going to put that out there.
Okay.
All songwriters need to write fishing songs. Graham, you hear that? Graham Nicholas behind the bar? Yeah, okay, good. He's on it. So you ended up in the Annapolis Valley, and you went to Acadia, right?
Yes.
For music therapy?
Music therapy.
This is where I read facts, and you say yes or no. You went to music therapy. You graduated.
Mm-hmm.
You have a music therapy degree.
Yes.
And you put it to use.
Yeah.
These are all facts. Good. You do this awesome thing that I've never seen any other musician do, which is music for babies. And I need to know how that goes over. Like, how is that as a songwriter playing music for babies?
It's wonderful. It's very improvisatory. I feel like I'm saying that word wrong, but yeah, I'm very much in the moment responding to the babies. And like, I'm singing songs I know, but like, I feel like I'm jamming with the babies.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Seeing what they like, what they react to.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, they're great to make music with because you can feel free to get weird and make strange sounds and noises.
A lot of music therapy is dealing with non-responsive individuals or
yeah,
babies
some of it is,
or
yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Has that been a lot of your work with music therapy then?
Some of it. I did an internship when I first started out at a children's hospital in Halifax.
Okay.
I spent a lot of time with babies, long-term, you know, babies who are there for quite a while. Nice. They have complex needs. So something I did was bring a ukulele, like, right into their little cribs, and even like the smallest ones were very curious, and they would pull on the strings with their little hands and hit the back and scratch the wood.
Wow.
And very responsive to sound. I would explore my vocal range and they would respond differently to different sounds.
Or higher notes or lower notes?
They love the higher notes. The really? Little babies love the high notes, yeah.
Wow, because I guess their ears could pick up higher frequencies than anyone.
I think that's true. And
you're a soprano, aren't you?
Theoretically, yeah.
Whoa, okay. Is that what you went to school for, soprano vocals?
No, my primary instrument was piano. Wow. At university.
And then you picked up church organ after piano.
I picked up church organ because a couple of churches in Wolfville needed someone to sub in. And I was asked, and I thought, here's my big chance to
you
play pipe organ.
You looked at that giant wall of pipes and keys and went like, yeah, I could do that.
I was already into pipe organ music and Baroque music in general.
Okay.
But I'd never played an organ, so it wasn't an opportunity I couldn't pass up.
When you're playing pipe organ and you're writing your own stuff on the side on, say, guitar, I imagine, at the time, is pipe organ and that style of music, is that starting to influence your personal writing?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. Like, I feel like the music I write is very rootsy and, like, blues-influenced and, like, country, and it is not... It is not Bach. It's not Palestrina. So there must be some connection, but I haven't figured it out yet. Hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
Will you play me a song that, you can choose this one, but I'm going to ask, will you play me a song that you feel like kind of crosses over those worlds for you?
Oh, man. I don't know... That's the thing. I don't.
It's an odd question. I figured I was kind of throwing you a real curveball.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like the one I played, it has like a kind of a drone A string.
Ooh.
Like something about the pipe organs is you can get a drone. Like you can just step on a pedal and you get that.
Right.
So if anything, that song had a bit of that element of it. And I don't know. Sometimes, sometimes churchy things sneak into my music.
Because
I'm a church organist. But,
have you ever written a song just full of church references?
I mean, I guess that one I just mentioned. Actually, I wrote a song. I've wrote a couple songs that have like brief little quotations from the Book of Common Prayer.
Okay.
Which is what Anglicans, it's the Anglican prayer book. But
you're going to have to school me because I was not raised in the church So... Yeah, my brain is empty when it comes to church facts. You're going to have to school me on the background of a lot of this stuff. But yeah, do you want to play the drone one?
Well, I just did. That was Mirror Machine.
Okay.
You know what? I have another one. Like, it was recently All Souls Day, which is November 2nd. It's 2 days after Halloween. And it's funny. Some church communities are against Halloween, but Halloween is a church holiday.
Okay.
Not everyone knows that. And it's a time, both to, November 1st, it's All Saints Day, where you commemorate the saints, and the following day, All Souls Day, you commemorate the people who've gone before you.
Hmm.
And you do think about those souls and spirits that have moved on to a different realm. So I do have a song that references those other spirits.
Ooh.
I can play that one now.
What's this one called?
It's called Haunt You.
Yes! Okay, I was going to bother you to play this anyway.
Ghost, you see me slipping out of sight.
I am your ghost, I am your ghost, and I will be the one to come to you at night. I am your ghost, and I will haunt you. Sky in the evening breeze, you feel me flying by in the trees, that low moaning in the leaves, you hear is me. I am your ghost, and I will haunt you. I am your ghost, I am your ghost, and I go to places only spirits go. And I know the secrets only spirits know. I am your ghost, and I will haunt you. I am seething in the shadows silently. I am frozen on the fringes fearfully. You will find me in the places in between. Sing the most. I am your ghost. I am your ghost, and I will be the one too. I am your ghost, and I will haunt you.
I want that ghost to haunt me for sure.
Yeah, we can figure something out.
It's like a cute little Studio Ghibli ghost.
Oh yeah,
following me around that
Those
song.
The
There's your music
ghosts.
Video.
There, that's a good idea.
So that song, and Miroshi actually is mm-hmm. your song that you mm-hmm. wrote.
Yeah.
You wrote I'll Haunt You as well, mm-hmm. but you just released that with the Dusty Halos,
I did,
correct?
Yeah.
Congratulations!
Thank you.
That's amazing, because the recordings sound so good. They're beautiful. Mm. And your partner in crime in the Dusty Halos mm-hmm. is?
Catherine Harrison.
How did you guys meet?
So we have a mutual friend, Thomas McCallum. And so the three of us, we're all churchy folk musicians. And Thomas had a Christmas show at the King's Chapel in Halifax in 2021. And he asked us both to take part in that. So we met there, and we were singing folk songs and hymns together, and we realized we had common interests, and we both liked to harmonize.
Were you standing beside each other harmonizing?
We were, yeah.
Oh, yeah, this is nice.
It was like that. And yeah. I'd been looking for a duo partner for years. Like, I always want to sing with someone else. Like, I find singing harmony with someone, it feels like magic, and I'm okay singing alone, but I always am happier singing a duo. So
yeah. You have such a strong voice alone,
thank you.
Too.
I mean, I think having to sing alone for all these years has made me a better singer, but there's something alchemical about singing harmonies. So I was happy to meet someone who was such a good match.
Wow. And have you guys written together yet? Or
no. She writes songs. I write songs, and we've done both of our songs, but we have not yet collaborated on a song. But
that must be so nice, so exploring the harmonies together and finding it.
Yeah, it feels good.
And you have a performance coming up that I will plug.
Yes, please do. We have our album release. It is December 9th. It is at Good Robot, which is on Roby Street in Halifax, and it's in tucked away on the top floor, and it's this little venue inside the bar called Mouse Trap.
The Mouse Trap. Upstairs at the Good Bro Mutt Brewing.
Yeah, cool. And it's a wonderful space, and I'm really happy we're going to do our album release there.
Congrats. It's a huge milestone, especially the recording sounds so good. Who'd you record them with in Halifax?
Curtis McAllister.
Okay.
Yeah, Halifax, or I should say Dartmouth. People from Dartmouth are very adamant that they don't live in Halifax. So he's a Dartmouth-based singer-songwriter, like recording engineer, producer. It's great. He's recorded other folk and acoustic musicians I know, like the McMillan's Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
And Jenny Lapp.
Okay, those are great recordings.
Yeah, and we just realized we kind of had a similar kind of touchstones or like...
Hmm. What are the influences that you bring to people? Like when you first met Catherine, what were you like?
Yeah.
Do you listen to?
Between the two of us, well, I learned she had a dog named Towns that was named after TVZ himself.
Okay. TVZ. I love that you just. Nice.
And we both like Graham Parsons and Dolly Parton. She loved Shania Twain. I don't mind Shania Twain.
You're on the fence, though.
Catherine actually went to her concert in Halifax. I'm not quite there, but there's appreciation for Shania Twain.
Oh, somebody can drop like $50,000 on stage.
We knew a lot of like folk and country references. Also, she's has experience as a church chorister. So we've both
chorister?
Done some.
That's a word.
Chorister's word, yeah.
Oh,
so
that's
like,
awesome.
Yeah, like she, you know, she's. She's got the chops when it comes to singing harmonies and hitting the notes. Like she has a very pure and beautiful tone. That's really lovely to sing with.
So. Were you guys taught shape singing at all in church?
Shape note?
Yeah.
I kind of picked it up just because I think it's interesting.
Okay.
And I've, we've done some shape note singing, like the two of us with some other musicians we know.
So. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, because you're referencing like a very particular period in country music when you're saying Towns and even Dolly and stuff that. But I feel like your musical background, you were able to reference Bach and say Bach properly.
Oh, it's because my mom's German and I took German lessons growing up.
Okay.
I can't pronounce it the other way. It feels really bad.
So your music catalog is going from like Baroque music... to Towns Van Zandt.
Well, like, it goes back to like Palestrina and Hildegard von Bingen, if you want to take it all the way.
Wow.
But,
wow. You have a tattoo of who? Hildegard?
Hildegard von Bingen.
Okay, who is Hildegard von Bingen? Fill me
in. She was a 12th century German nun.
You have a tattoo of a 12th century German nun?
Yeah.
Please tell me it's on your ass.
I wish I could.
Okay, go on. Sorry. Yeah, don't tell me.
Yeah, she was. She did a lot of things. She was like a spiritual leader and a mystic, and she was also a composer.
Whoa, and she wasn't burned alive.
No, she actually, the Pope was like her good friend, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a great person to have a tattoo of. How big is this tattoo? Full
it's
portrait?
It's like, from here to here, it's like most of my upper arm.
Whoa, you're pretty tatted for a church person.
I guess. So. Well, you know, Reverend Ed at my church also has a large tattoo. It's of St. Michael wrestling the devil.
Oh, my God. That's awesome. That's a pastor?
Yeah, it's a pretty good tattoo.
Oh, that's great. Oh, okay. This is fascinating because it's like...
Yeah, y'all should come to church.
Seriously. You guys are breaking some serious boundaries here. I mean, once they start selling booze and selling psychedelics at church, I am in.
I mean, Anglicans drink. Like,
right.
We drink during the service.
What?
We get a little glass of wine.
Oh, because it's blood of Christ.
Yeah,
but isn't that wine like 2%?
It's straight up wine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, Anglicans know at a party.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we do. That's the calmest reaction to we know at a party. Yeah, we do. Okay, very cool. I want to go back to Calgary because I'm very fascinated that you grew up in Alberta and then really wanted to move out here. Hmm. Because growing up in Alberta, I imagine there's a lot of pressure as well to be like a new country artist. Or I don't know.
Well, it's funny. I grew up in Calgary, but I didn't grow up around people who were into country. Like in my junior high school, like all the kids thought country music was lame.
Right.
Yeah, so I wanted to fit in. So I thought country was lame. And like my parents didn't listen to it. but it kind of seeped in around the edges anyways. When I was a teen, do you know who Billy Graham is?
Yeah.
Yeah, the like pastor? The big televangelist. Yeah, so yeah. His son Franklin Graham came to town.
Great.
Man. And he took over the Saddle Dome where the Flames do their
Dome?
Yeah. With people, seeking, a religious experience. And Billy Graham in his tradition would like tour around with country musicians. Like Johnny Cash would play for these events.
Wow.
So the one I went to had Ricky Skaggs and Kentucky Thunder.
Holy shit.
I was 18 years old. I was like, this is the music of the angels.
I can't believe I just said holy shit to that.
Yeah, he was singing like three-part harmony. High lonesome tenor harmony is gorgeous music. And I never heard anything like that. And it really stayed with me. Like even after I had some other, my attitudes towards religion have gone through some changes, but I still love that old time country gospel music.
Feeling the harmonies again. Yeah, yeah. Wow. So outside of church and singing in church, what was the first music that you started singing along to and trying to like nail? Did Ricky Skaggs really rub off on you and you started learning that stuff?
Honestly, Ricky Skaggs came a bit later. I got really hard into ABBA when I was 11.
ABBA?
Yeah. That was my sister's influence.
Were you a dancing queen?
In my bedroom, yes. I really, really loved ABBA, and nobody else at my school did, so I was the weird girl who really, really liked ABBA.
Were you dressing like them at school, too, then?
I had an appreciation for 70s polyester wear.
Sweet.
Yeah.
We would have been friends for sure in high school.
Well, maybe. but I feel like ABBA was a super solid foundation because they were amazing songwriters. Their music is not cool in any way, but it's incredibly good musically.
Yeah. did you see that Jeff Tweedy comment where he said... He's like, I regret all the years I didn't like ABBA.
He said that?
Yeah. Amazing. Because he was like, Dancing Queen was a great song. Why did I waste so much time trying to hate it?
Yeah.
It's absolutely true. I mean, they waited 30, 40 years to release another song, which is kind of insane. But
What's that?
They just came out with another album, didn't they?
ABBA did?
Yeah.
Oh, no way. I got to check it out.
I know. You're about to have your second ABBA phase.
I am. I can't wait.
The second Dusty Halos album is just ABBA sounds.
ABBA covers, yeah.
Up that production level. Your little disco sound.
I'm into it.
Can I request another song from you?
Yeah,
now that you're like hitting my playlist here, Haunt You is definitely on there. Would you play Come Around, actually?
Sure, yeah.
You could do that? I couldn't believe when I found out that you wrote all the songs that are on this first Dusty Halos album. I couldn't believe that you wrote them all. Alone. Yeah. They just seem like they're beautiful.
Thank you.
Not that I doubted your skills whatsoever. I was just, powerful stuff.
Thanks, Zach.
Thank you.
Why do you come around? You don't bring me. Shine your vision down like the stars so high above. You don't bring me any love. Why do you come to me at night? You don't bring like the sun I'm dreaming of. You don't bring me any love. You don't bring me any. Those nights I got nowhere to go, sitting waiting in my home, getting high and getting low, wanting some. Thank you.
Dark these songs are, and then they always resolve in this major. Huh. That's. Do you feel like there's a lot of darkness in you that you need to get out?
Yeah.
Because you're writing some, even the chords that, the dissonance and that little note that you're hitting there.
I won't disagree. When it comes to music, I've often drawn to music that, like, simultaneously, kind of goes to deeper and darker places, but there's also something affirming in it or something uplifting. Like, that's something I find in a lot of country music, bluegrass music, songs about death, songs about sin and, loss. But it's often feel good music at the same time.
Right.
Like, it's warm, it's acoustic, it's banjos and guitars and mandolins. And I find that, there's something about that combination of those elements, which for me is, carries a lot of meaning. And I don't know, I think it helps me work stuff out.
Hmm. As a music therapist, would you call that exposure therapy? Or you're exposing yourself to the darkest sides of life to just get it out of the way.
Yeah, it's like kind of like a container. Like, it allows me to feel those feelings and think those thoughts in a way that feels supportive, and there's some sort of safety or grounding.
Right.
Yeah.
Can I ask, does melody, are you a writer who melody kind of comes first, or does song and lyric kind of come first?
It's kind of not necessarily one or the other. Often
tandem?
Kind of a bit of this and that, and I might jump back and forth.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you're working through a dark song like that, and you feel like you've gotten through the darkness and you're finding the light, is resolving on a major chord on a song like that, is that a sign for you? Is that a message from you to the song or to the listener?
I don't know.
There is your resolution.
Yeah, that's the first song I've written in a minor key, which is interesting because, like, I don't necessarily write happy songs, but they have tended to be in major keys. But that one kind of goes back and forth between a major key and its relative minor, and I feel like even though it resolves in the major, it could go back, just a little bit.
The way you transitioned back into, I guess it's a G minor that you were in there?
Yes, I'm capoed, so what am I even
that
playing?
That was such a nice transition back into the minor in that song.
Yeah, it is G minor and B flat major.
Like, your sense of melody to hang that note over the minor chord, it's just gorgeous. I guess you are a trained weapon now.
Wow.
You are. You have all this incredible background. Like, okay, well, actually, I wrote this down because one thing I saw in your credits that blew my mind was that you took a course on neurodevelopment in music therapy.
Yeah, it took that a while back.
Still, so does the neuroscience of music, does that, are you...
It's very, yeah, no, it's fascinating, actually. Yeah, I talk about it a little bit.
Did you ever read This Is Your Brain on Music?
I've read part of it, yeah.
Didn't do it for
I've read a lot of Oliver Sacks.
Oh, yes.
And, like, he writes about music.
He freaks me out. I had to put those books down because I was worried I was going to develop some weird, freaky music
ophelia. He writes a lot about a lot of kind of abnormal or unusual cases. For sure.
The man who mistook his wife for a hat?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, they're terrifying. But I guess it's reality. Maybe I need to be exposed to more of it. But that stuff fascinates you, eh?
Yeah, partly, yeah. It's pretty interesting what music, from like a neuroscience perspective, like it seems kind of magic, but it's just the way it can work for people, for example, who have dementia. Hmm. With dementia, you will lose your newer memories before you lose your older memories. And old music, like music people learned when they were young, tends to stick around.
You Are My
and the
Sunshine,
way we, like,
stuff like that.
Yeah, and the way we like store and process music, it's very, it's not just, language tends to be kind of located in specific parts of the brain, whereas mm-hmm. music is more disparate.
Like multiple parts of the brain.
Kind of
all,
yeah, so like it tends to kind of be more resilient to loss. So like you can really kind of bring someone, like really engage them and bring them out of their shell through a song that they remember from their younger days.
Is that also a fine line though? Is that like you're walking that line between maybe triggering a person versus accessing beautiful memories?
No, that's right. It can also bring up, you know, emotions, and sometimes they can be sad emotions. That's not, it is a fine line. It's not always a bad thing necessarily.
Okay.
To, you know, if a client feels moved to cry, maybe they need that. And as a therapist, I'm there to like support them and kind of guide them, guide them out of that back towards, you know, a happier state of mind.
But is this like a one-on-one session in these cases too?
It can be, yeah.
Okay, for like, so I just want to get into music therapy for the listeners out there, because I talked to Sarah McInnes a little bit about it when she was on here, but I just think it's such an incredible, valuable field that really doesn't get the credit it deserves, especially the people working in it doing incredible work. So I'd love to get into a little bit about working with different clients and what it's like one-on-one in a session like that. Like, are you doing more group work or individual work in settings like that?
Well, currently, I'm not actually working with any dementia clients, although I have. Currently, I'm doing a group at a homeless shelter in Halifax.
Okay.
For the residents, for the people who live there.
Amazing. Is this a weekly thing?
Right now, it's every 2 weeks.
Amazing.
And it's just kind of drop in. We bring a bunch of instruments. Something there's a lot of musicians who might have lost access to their instruments for various reasons. So, like, a lot of people who come to the group are great musicians, and they pick up a guitar, and they can play stuff I can't play.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm there to support them, jam with them. Just give them that access.
That's such important work, and that's music therapy.
Yeah. Yeah, and it can help, like, talking to the staff at the shelter, like, just having things they can do that, like, just give them, like, joy in their daily life or something to look forward to. Like, it helps them with other goals, too, like, kind of working towards, having a plan and working towards something. Just, you need, like, we all need that. We all need just times where we can have a positive social interaction and not be like worried about, you know, how we're getting through the next day. So
a jam is so valuable for that. Yeah. I was going to ask you if you felt like music therapy is music therapy for other people or for you? Do you feel like it's something you can wield and kind of use, or do you think it's something that you started doing for yourself?
Oh, 100% is for me. It's because I found that engaging with people musically, just was brought so much for myself. I took piano lessons growing up, but I never thought about being a performer because I really never really liked to practice. It's always something my mom forced me to do, and I'm glad she did. But it's not. Some people do like to practice. Like, I went to music school. There's people who get a lot of joy out of that. I did it because I had to, and I've never wanted to be a perfect performer, and like that's, you know, anxiety inducing. I like to perform, but like
Family musical?
Kind of. I mean, my mom exposed me to a lot of classical music growing up.
They appreciated
really...
it, but they weren't players or anything.
Yeah.
Are you the first musician in your family?
Well, no, I have a cousin who plays organ, but like, my dad played a bit of piano. My sister played flute. So I wouldn't say I'm probably the one who's gone I'm the one who's like doing it, you know, for a living.
Yeah, still, yeah.
But where was I going with that? Yeah, I didn't know you could do music therapy as a job until I was like in my mid-20s, because I thought music was either teaching or performing, and neither of those appealed to me. When I found out I could just like play music with people, like for like the good of it, like just you know, not to be perfect or not to have to hold them to a certain standard, but just for the joy of it, I was like, oh wow, this is amazing.
And they appreciate it. Almost more than a lot of audiences would, I imagine.
Yeah.
A lot of bar rooms, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I love performing, but I mostly love playing with people in whatever capacity that is.
Someone who hates performing, you've had a pretty great gigging.
I like performing, record. But I don't like performing classical or performing in a way where, you know, I can't make mistakes. Like, I make mistakes all the time as a folk musician, but that's fine. That's kind of part of the folk music tradition.
My favorite part of those folky recordings are all the mistakes. Absolutely. Yeah, because your writing, again, like in your playing, gets into this old-timey bluegrass sound where I can hear kind of I can hear the church influence, but it just sounds timeless to me. What do you call the Dusty Halos? What genre would you say that is?
I mean, I describe us as a folk duo. Folk?
You ever heard the term ghost folk?
Ghost folk?
Yeah.
No, is that...
I've heard it thrown around before,
really?
And it's apparently a thing, so...
Okay, that's great. I'm going to start using it. Wow. Yeah, and like folk's an interesting thing, too, because there's people who play very traditional folk, and that's not really what we do. There's elements of it, but, you know, we also write our own songs. We don't always follow like the traditional styles, you know. I know people who play very traditional, and like I really admire what they do, and I always feel like they don't necessarily respect what we do. It's a different, you know, it's its own thing. So
I hear you. So from being a kid jumping into ABBA and jumping around your house alone to ABBA to now playing like songwriter circles and feeling like, I'm the weird one here. Have you always felt like the weirdo?
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Nice. Are you proud of it now, though?
I don't know. I don't know that I'm proud of it, but...
You have a tattoo of a 12th century nun on your arm.
I do.
That's some
pride. You know, when I moved out here and went to music school, I started meeting more people that got me. And I started feeling like I made a bit more sense to more people more often, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, other people who are, you know, weird in a similar way, so.
You didn't start adjusting your personality to what you thought other songwriters would want to hear or anything?
I don't know.
You didn't compromise yourself.
I don't think so. Like, I've always made music for, you know, to satisfy myself, I guess.
Are you satisfied?
Yeah. It's taken me a while.
Do you get that thing when you... Because I hear the hesitancy when you say yeah, and I think a lot of musicians do this now because we're all stuck on social media as promoters of ourselves for some stupid reason. But... do you get that feeling when you're on social media of like, I'm not doing enough as a songwriter, I'm not gigging enough, or I'm not out playing every night? Do you ever get that feeling?
I did for a long time. Things have picked up just this past year, which has been... But it took me so long to get to this point. And I've seen people who start much younger, get, you know, getting recognition, being successful, and that was hard for a long time.
You feel like you're starting late in the game?
Yeah, I mean, I won't reveal my age, but...
I would never ask you that.
I've been at it for a while, and I've, you know, it's been a zigzaggy road.
You have an incredible education, though. Like, your background, again, like, looking through your accolades and stuff on your website, it's the number of workshops and music therapy initiatives that you've participated in, let alone just run, combined with your schooling and your, like, your background in neuroscience and music is crazy, Rebecca. You've got a lot more experience behind you, I think, than a lot of those young musicians would.
I guess so. It's funny. Like, I went through this period of feeling very obscure and unknown, and then all of a sudden, I feel like I somehow bypassed the emerging artist phase. Like, I feel like I was never there, because all of a sudden, I feel like I've had people kind of have said things where they've, like, younger songwriters, like, looking up to me. I'm like, how did I get from nothing? How did I get from zero to, like, wherever, seven?
Zero,
like,
to here?
Without seven. Like, without the middle phase, because I don't feel like I was ever an emerging artist. I was always just struggling without actually getting anywhere, and then somehow things kind of flipped just recently, you know, not in any dramatic way, but it's just been interesting to observe that.
I feel like you're getting a little respect.
Yeah, a little bit.
Nice. So. Yeah. Good. It's well deserved. And I'm glad you're gigging so much, because I was kind of reminiscing with you at the bar before we started recording this about the first time that I remember being at an open mic and you were there and hearing the first kind of songs. I think because a lot of the songwriters at Acadia who went through music therapy, oh my God, I almost fell over. a lot of the songwriters at music therapy, I feel like there was a class where you guys had to write a song together or something like that. And then everybody came out of this. I remember going to open mics one December or something, and everybody just had a new song all of a sudden. And they were all like, oh, I love this song. I love this song of each other's. And yours really hit me. And here we are, I guess it's about 4 years later almost, and we're sitting at an open songwriter's circle at Deep Roots. And you start playing these songs, and I was blown away. Like, it really did seem like you personally just skipped a whole step, too, and were like, I don't want the weird, awkward phase of gigging. I'm going to write great songs. I'm just impressed. It's really
cool.
Thank you. It's really cool. And they're beautiful songs. I want to hear another one.
Okay.
I want you to pick this one, though, because I might pick another one afterwards. You playing all Dusty Halo's material tonight? I guess Miramichi was fresh.
Yeah, Miramichi, Catherine doesn't know yet.
Ooh.
Although I will teach a tour soon.
I'll tell her.
Yeah. But the other ones have been Dusty Halo's. I think I'll do another one from our EP. This one's called Lightning and Thunder.
Mechanical dragons pulling to the station, exhaling strangers, not one of them is you. Been here for days in this big city haze, don't bother complaining, just get on that train. When I was younger, lightning and thunder crashed down inside me. I let the white light guide me. Now nobody can find me. Children on tricycles and training wheel bicycles move through the light that fills the space between each other. Tell me, does the only child who grows up without others learn to become her own sister, learn to become her own brother? When I was younger, lightning and thunder crashed down inside me. I let the white light guide me. Now nobody can find me. I've been walking on highway, waiting for the Greyhound bus to come take me away from here to somewhere I belong. Black clouds not breaking up, it's too early for waking up. In my dreams, I'm taking up the slack that lies between us. You're holding the kite string and I'm holding the key. You're looking up into the sky at something I can't see. When you were younger, lightning and thunder crashed down inside you. You let the white light guide you. You let the white light blind you. Now nobody.
You hold the kite, I'm holding the key.
Yeah, funny little lyric.
I think you're the only songwriter I've ever heard make like a Benjamin, that's Benjamin Franklin,
that's
right?
That's a Benjamin Franklin reference. This is a song that had it had its beginnings a long time ago when I lived in South Korea, and I knew another singer-songwriter who wrote a song about Benjamin Franklin, and it kind of made it into my song.
You're like, I gotta do that.
Yeah.
I gotta throw Benjamin Franklin.
I like
Franklin.
Funny little references that in songs.
When did you live in South Korea? How did we skip that portion of
the
show?
Yeah, no, it was, it was over 15 years ago now. Yeah.
Wow, were you teaching English
or
something? I was,
yes.
Oh, cool. Whoa. Where else have you lived that's crazy?
I lived in northern BC for a while. That was a little bit crazy.
Pretty crazy, I guess. No. Yeah, it's not crazy in South Korea. It's not South Korea.
Yeah, I mean, Calgary's crazy in its way.
Where in north BC?
Chetwynd.
I don't even know where that is.
Do you know where Dawson Creek is?
There's a Dawson Creek in Canada? Sorry, yeah, there's like 18, I'm sure. No, I don't know where that is.
It's in between Dawson Creek and Prince George.
Okay. Oh, so when you said you'd been to the Yukon River, did you used to go up to the Yukon kind of regularly?
Not regularly. I did visit a friend in Whitehorse once.
Nice. But you didn't end up moving there, right?
No, although I've met other musicians who spent time up there, and it seems having even lived in northern BC, there's something about like living in a place where the summer days are so long and the winter days are so short, and just the coldness, I don't know, it kind of crystallizes things in a way, and, you know, it's more rural, and it's just a different, more of a feeling of spaciousness on a regular basis than I feel living in the city.
Would you say you're a city person? Do you get a lot of the city?
I don't know.
Does that rural life appeal to you?
It definitely appeals. Like, I see myself someday settling somewhere outside of the city. I don't know where, but...
City's a good spot for you, though, creatively, eh?
It is right now, yeah. It's easier to connect to other musicians and, just be doing the music life.
Yeah. But you were saying that you were disappointed that there wasn't a cool noise scene in the valley, right?
Aw.
We're getting it.
I loved living in Wolfville, but, yeah, I mean, the diversity of the city was something I missed after living here a few years. So.
Oh, my God. Being able to eat even, like, Mexican food would be nice. Yeah, absolutely. Will you tell me about your first time moving to Wolfville?
Sure, yeah. So I had... I was really lucky because before I moved here, I knew someone who had already lived here. So he hooked me up with a place to stay in a house... I can drop some names. Owned by Lisa Hammett Vaughn, who's one of the prime movers behind the Deep Roots Music Festival.
Amazing.
And right away said, "Want to volunteer?" And I said, "Yes, I do." So I was involved in Deep Roots for my first year living here. But then I moved into her house, and there were a bunch of local people who were either musicians or like connected just to the local art scene. Jeremy Novak.
Okay.
Roxy Peterson, who was an incredible harmonica player.
Yeah, and great accent.
The legendary Rick McNabb, who's yep. in this room right now.
Absolutely. Can't wait to talk to you, Rick.
Yeah, and an artist named Francois Godet.
Oh, yes.
Who else? I think...
I guess a lot of your...
Mike Obey lived in the house from time to time.
Okay, from time to time. Yeah. I like that. Yeah, there's always a rover.
And so my first... I moved here on a Monday.
What time of year did you move here?
Well, it was September. It was first week of university.
You moved here in September and then Deep Roots was like, what, two weeks later
yeah,
and you volunteered?
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa, that's
my
crazy.
First night, I arrived here on a Monday night. I was immediately whisked away to Patty's for the Monday night happenings, which is...
Monday, for the listeners out in the world, Monday night at Patty's is the highest grossing night of any bar in Nova Scotia, probably.
It's very
crazy.
Full.
It's an open mic night, and I don't know how they make so much money in one night, but...
Yeah, so I did that my first night, and there was an after party afterwards.
Of all the musicians?
There were people, like, playing, like, there was, like, a bluegrass band playing, like, outside this house in the middle of the night. Like, yeah, I'm like, oh, okay, this is Nova Scotia. So far, 10 out of 10. The next night, Roxy brought me to Tan Open Mic. The end of the week,
Tan Coffee Open Mic. Donna was running?
That Donna was running, yes. Awesome. I met Donna my second Holmes. Night. And then at the end of the week, I was brought right here. I came to the Union Street Cafe with a bunch of cool people. That's where I met Ariana Nassar.
Was Ariana playing that night?
No, but I remember there was a woman who was like dancing to the music in this very unusual way. I'm like, who is that person?
It was Ariana?
It was Ariana.
Awesome.
Yes.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I was lucky because I was a mature student. So just, like, hanging out with, like, students would have been okay because I made lots of friends in the School of Music. But I was happy that I kind of got connected to the non-student local Wolfville scene and, like, the musical scene here. And
all of those musicians that you just mentioned were actively gigging, like, almost every week when you moved here, too, right?
I met Scotty Marsters right away. And
this was 2014, you said?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a good time. The Night Kitchen was still happening monthly.
An incredible legacy for those listeners out there. Ugh, the Night Kitchen, I've heard so many stories about this. That it was just wild open mics, and it was a sign-up even, right? And it was, like, dense talent nights.
Yeah, they were great. I love those Night Kitchens.
Yeah. Well, so what did you think? Where did you think you ended up? Were you were you on heaven?
Pretty, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was also, like, a side of the student. I never lived in a university town, so, like, just the density of the students I didn't love. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, yeah, there are aspects of, like, kind of student life and party life that were... not appealing to me and that I couldn't avoid because I lived on Prospect Street, which is like a student ghetto in Wolfville. And, you know, there's a lot of, like, you know, day drinking and parties in the street and stuff.
I've heard about people having to wipe puke off their windshield before going to work in the morning. Yeah, it sounds terrible. Like,
but for the most part, it was positive.
So university town aspect didn't really appeal to you, but the intense culture did.
Yeah, I found it was a very... open and, like, welcoming musical culture here, which was different from my experience in Calgary.
Right.
And it was really good for me in gaining confidence and feeling like people actually wanted to hear my music.
Were you playing every open mic? Because, again, when you mentioned the Tan open mic, that's actually the first open mic I went to when I moved here, too. But it was like there was Tan on Tuesday, and then there was another one on Wednesday, and then there was another one on Thursday, and now in the Valley, it's like there is an open mic every night somewhere.
Yeah.
So did you just hit everything and just absorb all the music you could?
I didn't play that much to begin with. But I remember they had after parties at a house that was called the Purple Palace.
The Purple Palace.
And that's
Palace.
Where I first started. I would bring my mandolin and just kind of fake it and realize, hey, maybe I actually know what I'm doing. And just... It was kind of, it felt like a very open jam space, which, was also good for, like, just developing confidence.
Do you see it as a kind of your role now to create that space for other people? Because I feel like some of your work is.
I think everybody has musicality in them, and, like, having been someone who's felt frustrated musically or felt like I wasn't welcome in a musical space, like, I try to help I try not, like, I try to help people overcome that and be like, yes, like, whatever you have to contribute, like, we can work with that. Like, we're...
Nice.
Let's make music together.
How do you feel when you hear people say, like, oh, your talent is so natural, or think comments like that? Do you believe that?
I don't know. It's, you know, it's all combination.
Do you believe in prodigies?
I don't know. I think certain people are sometimes born with certain capacities, but so much of it's, you know, your family environment growing up or what you've been exposed to. There's so many elements. Yeah.
I kind of have a theory that everybody has an instrument.
Yeah.
And it's like their golden chalice. They're like, once they find that instrument, that's their voice. They know how to speak through that thing naturally. But I think that everybody has it. Mine might actually be recorder. It might not be guitar, but I hope it's not.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it takes a while to find it. Honestly, I feel that was true for me. Like, I played piano from a young age, but like performing classical pieces is not really my true voice.
When did you find your voice?
No, I liked singing from a young age, and I sang in choirs, but I don't know. I think I wanted to, like, you know, do what I'm doing now, play guitar and sing, but it took me a long time to figure out how to do it.
Have you ever done karaoke?
So much karaoke.
Oh, that, right.
I cut my teeth on karaoke. I really cut my teeth on karaoke, both living in Northern BC, where there's nothing to do except sing country karaoke on Saturday nights.
Country karaoke.
And then living in South Korea, where, you know, you always end up the night at like 6 a.m. in a karaoke bar.
And one of those like private karaoke rooms,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
One of those, that blows my mind as a karaoke scene. So what's your song?
The Winner Takes It All by ABBA. Whole Lot of Love by Zeppelin.
Whoa, that's a good karaoke song.
Yeah.
Even though
fun.
It says like 48 bars of Whole Lot of Love at the end.
Yeah, you kind of got to fake your way through that part. Yeah.
Those are your two songs?
Those were two. I've sung those ones many times.
Wow.
I've semi-retired them. But
I would not have guessed Whole Lot of Love. That's impressive, dude. Okay. Wow, you're a karaoke queen. Good to know.
Yeah, karaoke is good because it lets you expose a part of yourself that you keep hidden. Like, because, you know, probably a lot of us have a Robert Plant in us.
Nice.
That we don't show anyone.
The Robert Plant.
Except when you get up at karaoke. So it's good. It's cathartic.
So what you're saying is you believe there's a Robert Plant in all of us?
Well, in many of us, I think.
Okay.
I can only speak for myself.
Wait, is ABBA like the first song of the night and then Whole Lot of Love is the last song of the night?
Something like that.
Okay. Yeah, it would take me like... Actually, oh my God, I won't tell this story. I shouldn't tell it. Now I have to tell this story. I remember my wife's stepfather once getting just drunk enough that he would grab the ukulele around the campfire and then fake his way through Whole Lot of Love.
On the ukulele?
Yeah, but it was pretty much just a full-grown man strumming a ukulele that was out of tune and going, Whole Lot of Love! Whole Lot of Love! It's like if James Brown took a cold in the song.
That sounds...
That's great. Well, then I can't wait for him to hear that story because that made my night. It made my night. And plus, I'd never seen him sing any song, so it was really exciting.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening,
wish
Scott.
I could have heard that.
I'm going to request another song off the Dusty Halos album because go out and listen to this record, guys. These recordings are online. They're gorgeous. And the CD release show is going to come up soon, but go out and buy it online. I bought it on Bandcamp. It's a great place to buy it because so much of the money goes to the artist.
Yeah.
And then you have it on your phone. It's very handy.
Yeah.
Shout out to Bandcamp. But I would love to hear you play I Hear the Changes.
Yeah, for sure.
You played this song at the Deep Roots Festival, and again, you just hit my heart with
Thank
like
you.
This old-timey sounds.
Yeah, so, this one I actually wrote when I was still living here. But it's gone through... some transitions. I think the first time I sang it was with Sarah McGinnis and Valmy, and it was a cappella.
Oh.
This three-part harmony. But I've adapted it for
I love
for
that
guitar.
You chose the word transition, so you avoided changes.
Yes, I did. I was intentional. You're very sharp. Okay, this one's called I Can Hear the Changes.
I I can hear the changes, I can hear them coming on. I can hear the changes coming on. I can hear the changes coming, for the reason I'll be gone. And I can hear the changes coming on. I woke up with their music on my mind. Woke up with their music on my mind. It was the music of a funeral, but I'm leaving it behind. I don't wanna sing that song this time. There's no place in this world for me. There's no place in this world for me. I can hear the changes coming, and I'm going to get free. There is no place in this world for me. I can see the circle, I can see it spinning round. I can see the circle spinning round. I can hear the sound of sirens as they sing that water down. I see the circle, Lord, and I'm not gonna drown. I'm going up the mountain, I'm not coming down. I'm going up the mountain, I'm not coming down. When the wave comes rolling in, I'm not gonna be around. There is no place in this world for me. No place in this world for me. There's no place in this world for me. I can hear the changes coming, and I'm going to get free. There is no place in this world for me. No place in this world for me. No place in this world for me. I can hear the changes coming, and I'm
little song. So cheeky. There is definitely a place in this world for you, though. Please.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I have to say it. I hope a lot of people come up to you after shows and go, honey, there's a place for you.
Aww.
Yeah, that's just awesome. And I really love what you're doing. The whole sound you're going for is beautiful. I noticed you got really into talking about films before this podcast started with Graham Nicholas. And I wondered,
right. Verhoeven films.
Paul Verhoeven films, very specifically, yes. RoboCop in particular. I didn't want to spend the whole podcast talking about RoboCop, but I had to bring it up. But I wanted to know if are you a big film buff?
I don't know. I like film.
Paul Verhoeven.
Yeah,
that's pretty rare.
You know, I appreciate like art house film.
Okay. You a John Waters fan or anything?
I've seen a few John Waters films.
Okay.
Female Trouble.
Well, see, I honestly, there's a couple John Waters films I was like, I think I like John Waters, and I watched them and I was like, I don't think I like John Waters. I just can't sit through a movie, I think.
Yeah,
and
some of them are hard to sit through.
It's art though. But okay, so film, has it played a big part in your life though? Like, do you spend a lot of time watching movies and getting influenced by them?
I used to volunteer at the Calgary International Film Fest, and I've always sought out films like from different countries, and I don't know how has it influenced me. I don't know. Maybe it's just made me more aware.
Because you like the art of film.
I do. Yes.
Okay. What about the soundtrack aspect? Has there ever been a soundtrack that was like?
Yeah, I remember back when I was buying CDs and seeing a movie and being like, yeah. Got to get the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess you still can listen to them online. It doesn't feel the same anymore.
No, not as putting that CD in your car. And what are the soundtracks that stuck with you?
The soundtrack to The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Amazing.
Which, yeah. Ooh. Lots of ABBA and 70s disco.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I love that you have a disco face. I can't wait to talk about that on the next episode.
What else? I mean, probably one of the big ones, of course, the O Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack.
Yes.
I worked at HMV when that movie came out, and so many middle-aged men bought that soundtrack from me.
You saw a type coming in for that?
Oh, yeah. That and, like, Gillian Welch's CD.
Okay.
Yeah, there's always these middle-aged men. Like, with big grins on their... They were so happy to buy that album.
How many teeth were they missing? That's the question.
Yeah. I don't know.
Does O Brother Where Art Thou, does that still stick with you? Like, when you play, yeah. Do people come up to you and say, like, oh, do you know O Brother Where Art Thou?
I don't know, but, like, it's definitely, a touchstone. Like, and I've performed songs from it. It's.
What's the weirdest soundtrack that you were really into?
The weirdest? I don't know.
Like, for me, 2001 Space Odyssey on vinyl, I still put that on sometimes.
Yeah.
Even the, that weird, scary song. Yeah, I love that soundtrack.
Oh, man, I don't know what the weirdest one is. It's not that weird, but Bjork was in a movie called Dancer in the Dark. And cool. I had the soundtrack. She did the music. And it's a Bjork soundtrack, so there's weirdness for sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and she had songs that had like she used like the sound like industrial sounds as like instruments or like the sound of a train track or like a machine.
Cool.
Yeah. So very.
Is it 90s too? That movie.
Yeah, like, late 90s or maybe 2000.
Great era for Bjork too. Oh yeah, man. Yeah. Is that something you would ever want to do? Soundtrack work?
I don't know. Sure. Yeah, it's not something I've sought out, but if someone asked me, that would be really cool.
Given the instruments you play, I feel like you could write a really cool soundtrack now. I'll leave you to that one. You can have that project down the road.
Yeah, put it in my back pocket.
I just want to say thank you for doing this and coming out and being willing to come all the way to Berwick.
Yeah.
From the big city.
For sure. I love getting out of the city. I love coming to the valley. And it's an honor to be on this. Thank you.
Oh, are you kidding me? Thank you for doing this. You were on my list from the get-go when I started this whole idea. Absolutely. And then at Deep Roots, you blew my mind. So I was like, yes, absolutely, we're doing this. But I just want to say congratulations. And
thank you.
Really, thank you for being your weird self with me.
Yeah, thank you also.
Because we kind of know each other, but we've never really gotten to sit down.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you were moving into Wolfville around the time I was moving out.
So. Yeah, pretty much. We traded places. We tagged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't move into the Purple Palace or anything, though. No, I moved into the hills and ran from town because I was like, I cannot take the student life.
Yeah. Good choice.
We miss you up here.
Thank you.
And I hope that it feels like coming home. Coming back up here. That's a reference to the album that you also recorded with some incredible musicians up here.
Yes.
I just noticed you have it up here.
I know. So, yeah, in 2018, Kim Matheson, who's a local musician and record label manager.
Yeah, an Ruby incredible supporter records. Of the arts.
Yeah,
the
she put together this project. So Kim, Ellen Torrey, Sarah McInnes and I made an album together, a collaborative album.
That is four strong wins.
And yeah, there we still have some CDs, so they're.
Are they for sale on your website too?
They could be. Okay. I should add them. No, I didn't think of that. Yeah.
Awesome. Do you want to play me another song?
Yeah.
Play it out.
Let's play it out. I'm gonna play a song called Fall.
Oh, nice choice. Again, off the Dusty Halos record. Everybody, let's give a round of applause to Rebecca for coming all the way up here playing these beautiful songs. Thank you, Rebecca.
Body drifting down. I listen for the beating of your concrete heart. I thought I heard it breaking as they tore it apart. Destination, just another place to go. The pavement passes under, the miles melt like snow. Buy another ticket, trying to get free. But memory's a hunter, and it's coming after me. I know I'm gonna fall. Here comes that wrecking ball. I know I'm gonna fall. Here comes that wrecking ball. In the glowing of the streetlight, in the blinking of an eye, the ground spun out beneath me, my vision shattered wide. I thought that you would catch me as I went to ground. Your streets rise up to meet me as my body drifted down. The white lights looming over, their cold electric gleam. Then nothing else felt real, and life is but a dream. I know
Do you have like a jingle? Like, do, 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 Zach?